The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and co-creator of the new series Drawing Blood. You're listening to me on Canned Air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And joining us today for the third time now here on Canned Air from SwordDraws.com and the creator of the webcomic Always Kinda Itchy, which we're going to talk about later, and it was pretty cool to read there. It's pretty funny. Adam Sword, thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Thank you guys very much for having me back.
Got a good show lined up for you today. I always say that, and then I always say that I always say that, but...
It peaks itself each
week. Yeah, it really
patterns
does.
Are important, man. Yeah.
I no,
it's good... like cyclical.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's going to be good. I know it is. In our retro roundtable, we're talking our favorite animated films. I was seeing that this was in the Spider-Verse and Mary Poppins. The new Mary Poppins were both critically hailed at the Oscars that are coming up or something.
Is that Golden Globes?
Yes. I don't know my award shows.
The Spider-Verse, I think, is up for Best Animated Feature, and it's the first time, a superhero movie has been animated, except for maybe The Incredibles.
Oh, wow.
For a Best Picture category.
It's about time the supers get what they deserve.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Dude, I bawled during that movie, man. Oh, I wept openly in the theater.
During Into the Spider-Verse?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh,
really?
My God. Yeah, well, to be fair,
same here.
What the fuck?
I went at noon on a Wednesday, and I was very baked. And it's a kids movie, so they have kids movies previews before the film. And so there was one that came on about a dog who gets separated from his human, and then has to travel across the country to get back to the human. And the end of the trailer is the
he
dog running
home
down the street. Yeah. You don't really need to see the movie at this point.
You just right. saw it.
I don't know what happened, man. I got into my 30s and now I cry. It's a thing. And, it's me and five other bearded adult men at this noon showing of Into the Spider-Verse in the middle of the week.
Blubbering
and this dog commercial,
place.
Just ugly crying into my popcorn about this fucking dog. I'm like, he loves his human, damn it.
Oh my God, I thought you were saying you cried about Spider-Man.
That's
you
what I
cried
thought,
about
dude.
The fucking trailers.
Oh, well, that was the thing. They got me, they got me with the trailers. So by the time fucking Spider-Verse hit, every single note, I'm still leaking. Because I'm just oh, but it's so moving, and the family aspect, and there's just, I don't know. I'm not even really a Spider-Man fan to put it on Front Street. Never really clicked with me until I saw this movie. And now I'm fucking sign me up. Give me some tights. I'm going to do this shit.
There's a Disney commercial that does that kind of same thing to me. A little duckling that finds a Donald Duck comic and he's reading it and stuff.
I just saw that for the first time last night.
About every time when he sees Donald, I just almost.
Yeah.
Because he's so excited.
But then they cut away before you see his next set of disappointment when the Donald takes his head off and sees it's not a real duck,
Some schlub from around the corner.
Well, anyway, I keep forgetting we haven't even officially started the show, have we? But I'm glad that was brought up. I'm glad to hear that even Adam has a sensitive side to himself. Then in the comic vault, what do you have this week?
Scurry. Yeah.
Why does that sound familiar?
It was that gorgeous graphic novel I brought a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes. That's why it's familiar. Yeah. I brought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder in Hell number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting, right? I saw this bad boy on the shelf, and I just practically knocked the shelf over diving for it. And I'm glad I did. And so a few of the things we'll be talking about there, and then turning our full attention over to Adam to talk more about Always Kinda Itchy. But before we do that, don't forget to follow us on our social media handles, Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. We are also on Patreon for $5 a month. You get access to our monthly Canned Air Patreon pod, which is a lot of fun. We just put up a new episode a few days ago that has got to be one of my favorites, where we talk about the psychology behind the guilt that some people experience while playing video games. Boy, what a good combo that was. Yeah, so check that out. And Jack, what about the Wizard stuff we got going on?
If you're in the Oregon area, Wizard World is coming February 22nd to the 24th, I think it is. And if you feel like you're pretty lucky, we're giving away 2 3-day priority pass tickets to Wizard World. Just go to our website, hit the contest link, and fill out a form, and you'll be entered. That's it. No strings attached. Or if you don't want to test your luck, when you're buying tickets in the promo code area, use Canned Air for 10% off. So
everyone's a winner is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And stick around at the end of the episode. We are going to be playing now our, what is it, Jack, fourth song from the band Quiet.
I thought it was a third.
No, this is number four. This one's called Daddy's Too Old from the band Quiet. That's Quiet without the U. And off the album Kiss of the Universe. Again, love these guys. I recommend sticking around for this song. This one has more of like a reggae, almost kind of a sublime feel to it. So stick around for that at the end of the episode. But with that all behind us, let's just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
Do it. Do it.
Come on. I'm here.
Come on. Do it now.
Come on, guys. Let's kill Kenny.
Taste bad.
All right, guys. Our favorite animated films. Now, I feel like after I had sent you guys, you know, we're going to be talking about this, it kind of dawned on me. I don't think it was that long ago we just did this, but I don't remember a damn thing about what was said.
A lot of the topics, I don't remember what we talked about sometimes.
Where do we start? Adam, why don't we start with you? Favorite animated films.
Oh my God! So this is a hard one for me, because like there's the artsy kid in me that wants to pull like the Secret of Nim.
There's nothing wrong
or,
with
like,
that movie.
Or like Watership Down, you know, where I'm those things really did affect me. But if I'm being super honest, like the thing that I watched the most as a child was probably the Tiny Toons How I Spent My Summer Vacation VHS.
Oh, I didn't know they had a movie. I loved Tiny Toons, but I didn't realize there was a film.
Yep, it seemed probably longer because I was smaller and time was, you know, not terrifying yet. But it was just a standalone flick that they did, where everybody has summer vacation and, you know, Plucky goes on. He tags along on the Ham's vacation and Babs and Buster go to the beach and it's like a whole thing. And yeah, like I just it. When I think I can still picture like the opening sequence, like if I tried really hard or I don't know, took better care of my brain, I'd probably be able to recite the theme song, because it was at least like a twice weekly thing for most of my childhood. Like that was my jam. I love that fucking movie.
I'm gonna have to look that up. I didn't even know that existed.
I don't think I probably have seen it. They
I
might have
if it
turned
came, like
into...
after the initial run, or if it was during like the show's run that came. It had to have been during the height of its popularity.
It's probably both. They probably took the movie and put it into like three or four different regular half-hour episodes and played it through the week.
You know,
too.
that's a good thing, because one of the movies I was going to mention, or first on my list here, was from same kind of example, the early 2000s, 2003, I think it was, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon that came out. That first season was pretty cool. There were some crappy episodes in there, and they all have crappy, cheesy dialogue.
Dumb filler
stuff.
Episodes, yep.
But the end of it was the final assault on Shredder's palace. You know, he's got the big skyscraper in the middle of New York with like the, ancient Japan looking dojo decked out on top. Yeah. You know, he ain't hiding from anybody. Nope. There's a big foot on the side of the fucking skyscraper. I mean, not very inconspicuous. But, for a whole episode, they get ready for this. You know, they armor up their vehicles. They put on armor they typically don't wear themselves, bring in all the help they can, and they just storm this thing level by level by level. And it's so cool. They actually ended up making a video game of it. I don't know if it was the first or the second one, but or if that was even the whole game or that was just the end. But yeah, you had to scale every level of the skyscraper until you got to the top. And then in the cartoon, is Leo and Shredder face off, you know, and
as always,
the last thing you see is Leo behead him. And I was like, holy shit, this is ballsy. Whoa. For
in the cartoon.
Yes. I was like, this is ballsy. Damn. For a fucking cartoon. But
yeah,
you know, they cut away from it. You see Splinter's gone, which starts, you know, that's the teaser for the next season to start. And it rapidly went downhill from there. But at the very end, right when the credits are done or whatever it is, you see Shredder's body get up, pick up the head, and then walk away. Because in that series, what they eventually did was Shredder and Krang weren't two different entities. They were one. You know, so he Shredder was always just a Krang body. With the brain in the belly, which was pissed me off, man. So bad. Yeah.
Well, you know, you got to try things.
I get it. I get it. But
at least they didn't take the Star Wars route and see the head roll over, and it's actually Leo's head inside the Shredder mask.
Dude, that's such a better story. Like, end of that story immediately. Like, that's so much more compelling. They're like, no, I couldn't do it, brothers. We weren't right for this world. Also, I look horrible in blue, you assholes. Like, why did you make me wear this?
He should have had a black bandana.
Yeah.
The whole time.
You guys should, if you ever get What's-His-Face, did you guys have Peter on the show?
Oh, my God. He's almost, I don't think he does much of anything anymore, Peter Laird.
Yeah.
No, we've had Kevin, but not Peter. That's the dream.
Okay. Right. It
won't happen, though. Nah. Guy can dream. All right, Jack, where do you?
Well, one movie that I watched when I was a kid, and it did scar me, and Adam sat there, and he'd mentioned it already, Watership Down.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
It's about...
Not a children's movie.
Yeah, serious. I don't know why our parents... I mean, they had no idea, I guess. It looked like cartoons. It was a bunch of animals, but I know it's about a bunch of rabbits, and they go to war with, like, another herd of rabbits. I don't know what you call a bunch of rabbits. A gang...
I don't know. They're not a pod. There is a flock. They're not a herd. A
bunch of rabbits. Do you know what the term is?
A gaggle of rabbits.
My wife is googling it right now. She's extremely supportive. Cat harrow? Is it a harrow of rabbits? I want to say. I'm sorry. You guys can continue. I got to find this out though.
I'm also curious myself. Continue, Jack. We'll come back.
I don't. That's all I can remember about it. But it was. Really dark and twisted.
Just rabbits killing each other?
Yeah. And I know it left a scar on me and my sister. And not too long ago, Netflix redid it and did a CG version of it.
What?
And I was like, holy crap, told my sister. I was like, look it. And she was like, oh, there's no way I can watch it. I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can too. And I tried watching it. And like in the first 5 minutes, it just flashed back memories. I was like, I don't know if I could do this.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, what's that opening sequence with, like, the tribal illustrations of the animals fighting, even that to this day is just like, oh, man, I need, like, something to cover my face with real quick.
The first scene you see, one rabbit walks up to another one in their den, and he's, I don't know if he's dying or he's sleeping and having a nightmare, but it just brought back crazy memories. Just nuts.
One more time, the title?
Watership Down.
Watership Down.
That's such a crazy name.
It was based on a Warring book Rabbits. Originally. I think it was like a German book, I want to say.
Okay, well, making sense a little bit more here, aren't we?
Yeah, like when you start to, like when you're a kid, you're just like, what is this horrific thing my parents, because your parents see like, oh, cartoon bunnies, put the kid in front of it.
Yeah.
And like they don't know that you're about to witness this, like it has like the violence of a holy war. Like it's just such a visceral flick. And then when you're like, oh yeah, it's probably like a European book or something, you're like, okay, sweet, they're all about terrifying children.
I'm gonna have to look this up. I like, honestly, this thing I will have to look up. Like, yeah. I say that all the time.
I still want to watch the
now
one.
Though, and you're gonna be like, fuck those guys, like that's not we can swear on the podcast, right? I always forget.
Of course,
like,
of course.
Okay. Yeah, he'll finish and be like, those two guys are pussies, man.
No, I mean, how many times have we talked about the fact that, you know, viewing something and growing up with something as a child into adulthood, you know, obviously has a different effect on you.
Oh, yeah, so definitely.
Without the childhood scar that you two bear, I feel like I might be okay to give it a go. But who knows? I'm an animal lover, so... Is it, like, realistic looking at all? Is it...
I don't remember much from the animated. The new one looks
pretty real. Are we talking like real, heavy metal kind of animation where it's like 1,000 frames per second? You know, like the moving is so fluent.
I mean, no, it was pretty smooth. I wanted to say it was close to. Did you ever watch The Hobbit, the animated film?
No.
It was pretty close to that.
Okay.
Yeah, it had a lot more to do with that than it did Disney. Like it was. It wasn't. It was a cartoon, but it wasn't cartoony. Somebody treated it with a little bit more. I don't want to say sophistication, especially considering the webcomic we're going to talk about later, but it's like a little bit more sophisticated looking than a Disney flick.
Oh, wow. I've never heard such a description for a film. I'm looking this up.
Should ask Brooke about it. She might know.
I doubt it.
Think?
I feel like if she did know about this, I would have heard about it already.
That's true. Especially with being on Netflix, because it came out December, somewhere around that, I think.
Wow, fairly recently, you mean?
Yeah, it's very recent.
Wow, shit. How did this is okay? I'll just have to talk about it another time because you're blowing my mind with every word that comes out. We are back to you, Adam.
Other favorite animated flicks. Well, I mean, like we can shoot from the hip and talk about the animated version of The Hobbit because that is still better than the Peter Jackson trilogy that they put out.
I've never seen it either.
Well, you're a smart person. Like I'm a big fan. We're a big fan of Lord of the Rings in this house. About once a month on a Sunday, we'll just like power through all three of them in a day.
Wow.
Damn.
But like I tell everybody once that I meet month. That hasn't read them, that's like, oh, I've only seen the movies. I want to read the books. I'm like, don't read the books.
Yeah, I tried that. Yeah. All the songs, you know, like, in the description is like, put you to sleep.
Yeah, they're dense. I have some big issues with Tolkien as a storyteller, as a world builder. Like not a lot of peers exist, but the man had some narrative issues, which is exemplified by The Hobbit and the fact that, you know, the War of Five Armies, which is the culmination of The Hobbit. There's five separate armies that come together to fight over the dragon's hoard. And in the trilogy that Peter Jackson did, like they stretched that out into a whole movie, because in the book it's about five pages, because Bilbo gets knocked unconscious at the beginning and then comes to at the end. Like when he wakes up, the war's over. And, you know, but in that same book, way at the beginning, you have an entire chapter describing a meal, not what happens at the meal, not the importance of the meal, literally just the preparation of the meal. And, you know, so like it bugs me a lot. Like I have Tolkien issues. That would be a great name and theme for a podcast. There you just go. Tolkien issues. Tolkien issues.
Hobbits loved their food. So he made you know that by reading in description.
I mean, I feel like a brief description saying hobbits love food would suffice rather than a whole
really
chapter.
Beat it into you. That's what
feeding, I guess. Gee, man. Christ.
I mean, in Lord of the Rings, they managed to accomplish that just with, was it Mary? It was Pip Mary was like, what about second breakfast?
Yeah.
You're like, that's a novel. Why is nobody in the world, why isn't that caught on?
Yeah.
Like, as an adult, I can't think of a fantasy trope that I'm more in support of than second breakfast.
Mm-mm. I feel like a lot of people have second breakfast. They just don't call it second breakfast.
They call it brunch
or snack or...
But then they
wouldn't it be great though? Like you get to work and an hour later, you're like, "All right, sweet, second breakfast break."
I do that anyway.
See,
it's
second only, breakfast, only, yeah, it exists.
I loved the Hobbit movie, man. I thought that was great. It was the first cartoon movie I saw that wasn't in the traditional real American style of animation that we were all raised on from the Disney camp. And it was, you know, it was a story I was familiar with. I read The Hobbit, I think, when I was in third grade. You know, Gollum was scary. Gandalf was badass. You couldn't tell any of the dwarves apart, which is very similar to the book and the movies. So that one was really good. I mean, cartoon movies, like, they didn't hit for me as hard as cartoon shows did, because, like, it was harder for me to get access to cartoon movies after a certain age. The kids section at the movie store by my house was very small. And, you know, my parents, like, they were very permitting for me. Like, I think I watched Predator when I was, I don't know, six. Like, there's a story in my family history about Jesse Ventura yelling at my dad because he let me watch Predator so young. So, like, I got into regular movies real quick before I was kind of like, animated stuff, all right, that's fine. But
I've got some good friends back home that I grew up with. And ever since kindergarten, like, I've been friends with these guys for, like, 30 years, all right? And their childhoods, they just, you know, are very similar to what you described there, Adam. You know, they were not, while I was watching Disney and these kind of things, you know, they were watching True Lies. They were watching The Fugitive. I have friends like that, too. You know, and into adulthood, especially now in the age of nostalgia, when I'm with a group of friends, everybody is sitting, you know, talking about, oh, remember this, remember that. And these two are just kind of like laughing, like, oh, yeah, we were watching Blazing Saddles when you were watching that. And I just, it's funny, okay, that's a quick thing to laugh at, but that's kind of sad, too. You missed out on a bunch of shit, yeah. I think. And
that's true. It's true. I mean, when I was four, my favorite actor was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Now, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, yeah.
And I don't.
No, but, like, I was also four. So, like, right. Hard Target or, like, Kickboxer, I'm not understanding the concepts of abandoning your post at the foreign, like, with the Foreign Legion. I'm just like, oh, there's the dude that does the splits real good and is Kung Fu guy.
Kicks right. A lot of stuff.
Yeah, for yeah. Sure. And I'm not even, I'm not saying that your situation is sad, Adam. Please don't take it that way, because I
it was a little sad.
Obviously, okay. By our conversation, you are not devoid of, you know, childhood cartoons. But these gentlemen were totally devoid of, like, Disney is kind of like a foreign thing to them, which is fine. We don't all have to be drinking the Disney lemonade or no. Kool-Aid or whatever it is. But you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Well, to be fair, I mean, if you consider the box office gross of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we are all drinking that Kool-Aid now.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no avoiding
that Kool-Aid. You can't get out of a gas station without seeing that Kool-Aid plastered on 500 things.
But see, those are movies that those two dudes don't even go see.
Oh, really?
Maybe the one sees a few of them, but from the large part, you know, large scale, they don't give a shit. And yeah. I just wonder if it's a result of that, or if it's just like, I mean, obviously some people, not everyone's going to be into it, but it seems like most people are into it.
Hold on. There is would Cool World count as an animated film, or like Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Those are both predominantly. I mean, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was legitimately cel animated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I had that on my list here. I mean, I know it's kind of breaking the mold of a, you know, full animated feature film, but definitely qualifies, and especially with Mary Poppins Returns being in the limelight.
Considered, yeah.
Yeah.
I still got to see the original.
You've never seen Mary Poppins?
Mm-mm. No, Misty really? Was, well, not castrated, but she gave me the shit for not ever seeing that movie either.
I mean, it's.
I can't. There's kid, no way I could watch it now. And no. Be like, oh, it's a really good movie.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
No, you'd be like, God damn it, is this almost over? But as a kid, again, in wonderment is all about, you know, that
Disney magic. All of a sudden, yeah. They're playing with cartoons.
My God! Wait a sec. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud here. There was like a Macaulay Culkin movie when he was a kid, The Pagemaster.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Or like,
about
that. He went to a library and he turned into a cartoon.
I forgot about that. Yeah. James Rolfe just had Macaulay Culkin at his place, and they did a video where they were playing that game of the Pagemaster together.
Really?
Yeah. It looked pretty funny. Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
Oh no, that one just like that one just hit. I was like, I remember watching that one too. But honestly, I don't know if I remembered watching that one. So much as a kid as I did when I was like in my early 20s and just starting to smoke weed. And then somebody was like, yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, I think I'm a more accurate child when I'm nice and centered than I was when I was an actual child.
Sure.
But because like now, you know, when I see the turtle sewer home at Target, I'm like, Mom, I want this for Christmas. And now I'm like, I am going to buy this. I don't care how many zeros come after that.
Right.
So it's like being an actionable child. That's really the appeal of making art for a living, is that like it's the easiest quote unquote way to just stay 5 years old forever. Mm. It's like I can buy a Turtle Sewer home, and as long as I can convince somebody within a calendar year to pay me to paint something remotely turtle related for them, it's a tax write off.
Mm-hmm. We know about that.
Yep.
Right? You guys are all, it's the best, man. Like, yeah. It's just like, no, I have to buy this. It's for work somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. I get to write off what was it we just gave away for our Christmas episode, was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Next Mutation DVD.
Flash Gordon,
a whole bunch of Golden Cap. Yeah.
Hey, you guys, Flash Gordon, really? That's impressive. That's like, that's one of those fandoms I feel like that they lose a person every day. Like, there's just somebody that dies that knows about Flash Gordon, and there's not a person to replace them.
It's a weird thing, because I've known of Flash Gordon for years, but I've never seen it. And sure. I think you had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it as one of the prizes for the games we were playing on our Christmas episode, and I am the one who ended up getting it. So I didn't expect much of it. I put it in. I was going to wrap some gifts while I watched it, and boy, if I wasn't fucking enthralled, man. I was like into it. It was corny. It was cheesy. But, no. You know, watching Batman 66. I watch a lot of like TV from the like 70s, mm-hmm. I admit, sure. Here on Canned Air. But so I'm kind of
just so it fits in
used
that whole
to
genre.
Cheesy, yeah. You know.
Yep.
But I don't know where I was even going with that.
Flash Gordon, man.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome.
You don't need to go anywhere. Like, if Queen does a song about you, you're good.
He'll save every one of us.
It has the best character description ever. You know, they don't spend time on it. It's just like, who are you? Flash Gordon, quarterback, New York Jets, fuck you. You know, that's it.
Got it.
Yep. That's all right. You get.
Excellent. Need no more, no less.
On with the action.
Yep.
You know?
You know, that's something that you miss out on, is that simple introduction of concept. Like, that things are so convoluted in storytelling now, and people are so concerned about details and backstories that, like, you lose out on a certain appeal of a place where you're just like, hey, this is it.
Yeah, why can't it, off to this is just you go. It, let it be.
Yeah.
Don't dig too deep, mm-hmm. Just to accept it. It's amazing.
Right.
You know, I wish, kind of going back to Mary Poppins, you know, when they announced this whole sequel, I was just kind of like, what in the hell?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not the biggest Mary Poppins fan. Yeah, I've seen the movie. We went, when we were in New York, we saw it on Broadway. That was incredible. But, you know, I know a classic when I see one. I mean, I don't need to proclaim it a classic. The world has said Mary Poppins is a Disney classic, right? Mm-hmm. Why the returns? You know, it's so tacky, I think.
I think it's Yondu's fault.
I don't think so. I mean, since they have had success with these live adaptations of their old animation thing, they were just pumping them out. And they're even doing them in the order they did back in the day, you mm-hmm. know? For the most part. I guess we're getting Aladdin and then Lion King's to follow. But, man, what about The Little Mermaid? They skipped that one, didn't they?
That I keep seeing that's coming on, or someone else made it, and it's a horror movie now, and I don't know, it's just...
Yeah, you can't really do a live-action Little Mermaid and not have it raise some serious questions.
Like, oh, yeah.
I see you're going, yeah. It's way easier, you know what I mean? Like, but after a while, you're like, that dude wants to fuck a fish lady. Like, you have to confront that.
It's kind of hard to keep it clean after a little bit.
Yeah.
But they all do. All those princesses and princes in all those stories. I mean, what aren't they all fighting for that? The right to do that? Fight sort of. For the right to get nasty? Right?
Yeah. I mean, that was the whole thing with, I remember when they did, when Hermione was in the Beauty and the Beast live action. Everybody was freaking out because they made one of the main characters gay.
Yeah.
And I saw a reaction video to one of the posts somebody had made about that. This dude was like, you guys are worried about a gay character, and the main, like, Hermione is trying to fuck a water buffalo.
Yeah.
Like, you're all right with that, but somebody's gay. Oh, no.
Yeah. I understand. Oh, this is such a fine wire to walk right here. There's no issue with having a gay person or character in a Disney film by any means. I think maybe what people's dispute with it was that they weren't maybe communicating that well was how it was done. Was just like, I don't know, because when we went and saw it, and there was like the camera kind of just cut away from everything to show like, look, we got a gay person in our film, and then cut back over. And it just felt kind of tacky, where if they just would have integrated it normally, you know, not had to a step aside to show us.
Wouldn't have noticed it so much, and we were doing a big deal right. for society.
And I feel like
right
that's
now.
What it was. Yeah. Let's just look at what we've done. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Sure. I think it should have been done more subtly. What's that?
You're talking about tacky in the context of a movie that has a singing candlestick.
Touche, Adam. Yep. Touche. But
like, not for nothing. Like, I agree that, like, you know, ham-fisting in social awareness and inclusivity, there's obviously, as time progresses and you no longer have to ham-fist it in, when it just becomes an integrated and accepted part of narrative.
Exactly.
Then
exactly.
Sure, like, it can be something really subtle. Like, when they made Sulu officially gay in the Kelvin timeline in Into Darkness, or not Into Darkness, mm-hmm. Star Trek Beyond. The only thing that happened is they get off the ship, he picks up his daughter, and then walks off holding his husband's hand. But
that's perfect. Yeah. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah. That's great, but like that's also like even that was met but with massive resistance, like by no less than George Takei himself, who was like, I never played him as gay, even though I'm gay. Like, why does he have to be gay? Why make Sulu gay? And you're like, well, why make Spock fuck Uhura? Like, why remake anything at all if you're not going to try and... Like, there's no point in just rebooting something for the sake of rebooting it. Like, unless you have something, a new angle to tell a story from, why bother? You know, and especially for, like, coming from the world of comics, I'm always astonished by that, man, when people are freaking out about Black Lady Iron Man or Lady Thor or Black Spider-Man, like, apropos of an animated film. People get so up in arms, like, you're damaging the character. This isn't my character. And it's like, motherfucker, your character still exists. Right. Like, if all you ever want to read is the fucking, you know, Humberto Ramos fucking Spider-Man, or, like, you're really into how misogynistic and homophobic Frank Miller's Batman is, that still exists out there for you. Nobody's erasing that. But even, like, the reason it's happening, especially with Disney-related properties, is because Disney doesn't actually have morals. They just want more money. And, like, so the broader the appeal, the more people are going to buy it. Because no matter how much somebody bullshits, like, oh, I'm not going to see that movie because that character is gay. Well, that's cool. So you lose one, but you gain 15. And, like, there's no shortage of popularity amongst the gay community as to the early animated Disney films. They're
that's
all
interesting. You know, to think about Disney not having morals, that's... Because at a faraway glance, especially at like the kids' movies, of course you would maybe think, well, yeah, there's got to be some kind of moral code. But when you start to think about what it might be, you're like, well, maybe not.
The writers, the directors, the producers, they might have morals. They might have stories they want to tell. But Disney as a corporation is too big and divorced from reality to really care, man. Like Disney's the kind of company at this point where, like, if America legitimately became a fascist nation, Disney would still make movies here because there's money to be made, man. It's not like corporations act like viruses in that way, and they don't care what their host is as long as their host has resources.
They just make sure Disney doesn't give a shit. Fascist people in the Beauty and the Beast films,
yeah. Right? Like, and, you know, the fascist thing with Disney is especially kind of a touchy subject. You know, with Disney's, some of Disney, like Walt Disney's worldviews. But, you know, they're even like the original Mary Poppins on that topic is even getting flack right now because of the minstrel scene where all of the kids are like they have the coal dust all over their face.
Yeah.
There's a legitimate outcry now. They're like, this is basically blackface, you guys. Like, it's not, but it is. You know, it's the closest you can get to blackface without it being blackface.
That's reaching.
Yeah.
I mean, weren't they like hanging out with chimney sweeps and shit?
Yeah.
Come on.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely were. But it's not just like the context of like, oh, they were hanging out with, like, it also happened to take place in a musical number. And there's like, I don't know, there's like a whole rabbit hole you can go down there. But you know, at the end of the day, it's she still fell in love with a water buffalo, and that's more concerning to me. Like, I understand the Disney parable of like, oh, well, you have to fall in love with them when they're not human to prove that you love them and not just love them for their body.
Sure.
But, I mean, you know, they never hook up until they have the human body, so it's obviously still pretty important. You know what I mean?
Like, I think.
She may have brushed his nether regions, but who knows? Left that in the bedroom.
That was a short montage. They should have lengthened it. We could have seen more. All right. Well, I think that was a hell of a good conversation.
Transformers. That was my last one.
I'm sorry. I would let you have it, but we're at 40 minutes now, and in 20 minutes, we have to be on another call with someone.
Well, I got
else.
It out there, so okay. We're good. You got the touch. We can...
That's true, but we can't go out on it.
I know.
We're going
out
on a quiet song. All right. I'm going to skip the commercial, and we're just going to jump right into the comic vault here really quick. And I'm going to just go really first. Let's knock these out quick so we can get to Adam and find out more about Always Kind of Itchy. But my book I'm bringing this week, like I told you, is Shredder in Hell. And in issue 50 of the IDW run, what happens is, I believe it was issue 50, Splinter and the Turtles finally catch Shredder and kill him. Now, in this incarnation of the Turtles, everybody, you know, Shredder, Splinter, and the four Turtles are reincarnations of, like, themselves from ancient Japan. So death really doesn't mean shit for them, I guess, right, well, yeah. That I think about it. But you see, he gets beheaded by Splinter, you know, and they kind of have a coming to at that moment where Oroko Saki questions his path. Have I been doing the right thing? And you kind of are alluded to maybe he thinks he has been doing the wrong thing this whole time, the second before Splinter beheads him. Well, where this book picks up, you see him waking up in the afterlife. And he's in this woods that he and Hamato Yoshi used to play in as kids. And what he quickly comes upon is the person he originally was in ancient Japan, the person who started the foot, Takeshi Tatsu, which pretty much is just Shredder, but just, again, the ancient Japan version.
Oh, okay.
His original body before he was reincarnate. And they kind of have a face-off, and he gets the shit kicked out of him by his evil self, which they kind of end up referring to as the dragon. This is the entity that's always in him. This is the entity that he's always been fighting for years, and that's always been power-hungry, you know, hungry for death and stuff like that. So now that he's in hell in this afterlife, there's been a clear separation of himself from this character. And they have a battle, and it really doesn't end with a winner. You just see Shredder kind of get sucked through all these vacuums by all these tentacles. Again, he's in hell. And he keeps getting visited by Splinter throughout this, like a spiritual version, who is kind of walking him through this afterlife onto the next, you know, to, I guess, help his spirit find peace or what it's looking for. Mm. Shredder kind of looks at me and says, I'm not looking for peace. I'm not looking to be a puppet of fate or eternity. I want to have control of my own destiny is what I want. And he sets out on it, you know, on his own, leaving Splinter kind of behind where, you know, he was saying this is where you could have made a new beginning, been a better person, even if it is in the afterlife. And still he says, hell no. He's got to find his way back before love, I guess. I don't remember him having a mistress, but it looks like he is wanting to get back to her in any way, shape, or form he can. Well, anyway, a little bit later in the comic, you see him kind of walking through hell, looking at the lakes of fire and shit, and all of a sudden he gets attacked by what appear to be hundreds of zombies, but each one of them is a soul, is a life he's taken. In real life, all these people are coming to take him out. So it's him taking all these hell beasts, you know. And it ends with him turning to see demon versions of the Turtles standing there, ready to take him on.
Those are sweet looking.
Aren't they cool looking?
Yeah, yeah.
Take a look at that whole book. It's fucking awesome. You're going to have to read the name on it now because I forget who did it. It's right on the front there.
Mateus Santoluco
does the art and does the story. So I enjoyed it. My description wasn't great because I'm pressed for time here, but
Shredder's helmet looks sweet. I like the way they did that on the face mask part of it.
Yeah, he looks cool. But anyway, check it out. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder in Hell.
Nice, man. That's sweet looking.
Cool.
That was a good bumper too.
Like that?
Yeah, that was nice.
Shredder in hell.
you were just really committed to that, like, right away. You're like, all right, I feel like I didn't describe this well enough. Fucking Shredder in hell.
The microphone has that effect right there. On you, Adam. Yeah. It really does. What about you, Jack? What you got?
I have it started out as a webcomic called Scurry. You go to scurrycomic.com. It's done by creator Mac Smith, and he's at Twitter at Mac Smith Art. And it's a story, something about animals on this episode for me with the rabbits in the first one.
This something one's about turtles with me in this episode.
That's
right?
True, yeah. This book's about a colony of mice that they're living in this abandoned house, struggling to survive in a super long winter. And they're sending out scavengers trying to find food. And they realize that the people that live there aren't coming back. The whole neighborhood's pretty much cleared out, and they need to find more food. And while they're going to find more food, they're running into a lot of different birds, wolves, gangs of cats, any of your evildoer animals, I guess.
Anything bigger than a mouse.
Yeah, pretty much. Even right. Rats, I guess, yeah. Are in there. But the artwork, that's pretty much what sold me the first time, just seeing one picture of a mouse standing in front of this giant turtle that apparently I haven't gotten that far in the book, but he's like some wise turtle maybe showing him the main character, I think his name is Wicks, on his way to find where this truck, abandoned truck full of food is that everyone's heard about. But it's just a big adventure.
Jeez, that is a beautiful premise, man. Like you're saying this out loud and I'm like, I would never in a million years think of a story like that. But as soon as you're like mice surviving winter in a barn, there's so many logical steps in that process that are really captivating. Yeah. Well done, Max Smith. That's fucking like I have no clue what you're talking about. I'm already sold on this book. Holy shit.
And it's so, I guess it's kind of easy writing because like your villains are easy because a snake is always going to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
A cat versus a mouse is always going to be a bad guy. This, the, can't think of the word, whatever it is that they have going against him constantly. You're a mouse. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I wish they'd do a comic about the mice that live in my fucking basement. I could zero in on those bastards.
But that's mine. It's a gorgeous comic. It's two trade paperbacks. They're not paperbacks, but hardback books.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I think it's around 200 pages each, but yeah, they're amazing. The artwork's awesome. Scurry.
They're going to look good on a bookshelf.
Yeah, they are. For sure.
Very good. All right. Well, with that behind us, let's talk about another comic here. The one we're all here to talk about. Always Kind of Itchy. Adam Sword, again, thank you for being here with us. And man, you got to tell us a little bit more about this web comic. You sent us some samples of it. And it looks to be like strip format. And what I've seen thus far is pretty amazing. The first one, I hope you don't mind me mentioning one of these.
Please do. They're all available.
Feel kind
of
dirty a little bit.
Is number three, where he's just, you see this character sitting in a recliner eating cereal. Munch, munch, munch. Next square, he's putting more in his mouth. Munch, munch, munch. And then the last one, so he says, I bet cereal would make it's really tiny.
Metaphor
for life or something. Yeah, sorry, I have it really tiny on the screen. I should make it bigger, but
it's all good.
I love how the comic beat the joke to the punch, I guess. It got there before the joke did.
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. I'm really, this is really different for me. I've been, making comics for like a decade, and I've never really tried the comic strip format. I like really briefly about 10 years ago, like I started trying to do a web comic and it fizzled out after like 8 strips because I just couldn't think of anything. I was like, I'm not funny. Like, what am I going to say? And it turns out not being funny and not feeling like you have anything to say would eventually pave the way for the web comic that I'm now doing.
Right.
I'm handling art duties on two separate standard like floppy comics right now that are both like mini series. So I don't have a lot of time to work on my own projects. And then, with tattooing tagged on top of that a couple days a week, the beginning of the year hit. I was on a social media blackout for pretty much all of December. And it's like, I need to do something, man. And I had drawn a promo for the podcast that we do, the end of the year podcast, it's just me and my buddy. One of us couldn't make it, so it was just me and my buddy Billy. And instead of doing any formats or having any sort of theme, we literally just put music on and talked for like 2 hours. And it was really nice and cathartic to not have to be like constrained by time or segments or whatever. And I had said at one point in that podcast, adulthood is kind of just like being at a party, standing in the corner eating beans, trying to figure out how you got there. And like, I was like going to make some promo for the podcast based on that, because like when I said it, it made me laugh. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. And I just kind of scrawled almost with my fist this little face holding a spoonful of beans. And I was like, that guy's kind of funny looking. So I wrote the first 9 strips and drew them that night in about 2 hours. And it is, man. It's a strip comic. It's a daily comic. I think the 35th one went up today. It's on my Instagram at Sword Draws. It has its own Instagram at Always Kinda Itchy. And it goes up on my Facebook and my Twitter every day, which are both Sword Draws. And it was just something to do. Like, I was like, I just want to do one thing a day that's like mine. And it's been strange because it's only been about a month, but there's been a bigger response to this than anything I've ever done.
No kidding.
I've gotten like really, really heartfelt messages from people about like, dude, I've been super depressed for months, and now every day I wake up and look forward to getting online to read the new Itchy. Like one of the people sent me a message is like, I've had some shit in the last 6 months. I felt really lost. I don't really know what I'm doing. And like, this comic makes me feel okay about that instead of like a failure. And I was like, that's fucked. Like, holy shit. This is me like literally
making,
like, I have no idea. Yeah. Like, I've never really had that response to my stuff before. And it's been really humbling and really cool. There is a small part of me that is that's not bitter, but not bitter. That after over a decade of learning how to like render things in an interesting and realistic and dynamic way, and studying page composition and color theory and pacing and all this different shit that I've done for my art, the stick figures that look like I drew them with my left fist is like the thing that people are sparking to.
Right.
So it's like, oh man, maybe I could have had a life in my 20s. Like, but it's cool, man. Like, it's just a webcomic. Like, I I'm gonna try and do it for a year, see if I can come up with enough shit for a year.
That's
kind of the plan.
Love the way you draw this character. It's an organized messy almost.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's supposed to look uneven and jagged and stuff, but there's what am I saying? Actual proportion and a rhyme to the way he looks. But it's a relatable character. I mean, even without reading the comic, just to kind of glance at him, I think is a good visualization of what a depression kind of looks mm-hmm. like, you know?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And I also notice, not in all, but in some of these panels here, I'm sorry, I'm talking slow because I'm looking over them. It looks like his character is even done in a lighter, a thinner line than some of the other characters who seem to be more self-confident might be drawn in a bolder pen.
It's pretty true. Like, it's all done on the iPad, but in Procreate, but the Apple Pencil has some ridiculous, like, couple thousand levels of pressure. So typically I'll draw the panel borders and the main character and usually his dialogue too, in dry ink brush tip, and then for the everybody else, really, they're always done with like the studio pen, which is like really clean and perfect, and like I'll spend more time making their lettering look like a little bit more almost computerized, like it's a little bit more uniform than the main character's text. So like we had a big conversation because I was like flabbergasted. My dad, he's like, this is the best thing you've ever done. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, after all the time I spent learning how to do this shit, this is what you like? But so my buddy was trying to calm me down because like he was like, dude, this is like, yes, it looks sloppy, but it's obviously informed by an education and an expertise in storytelling visually, because you do have all these things. And then that was like 15 strips in, and I went back and looked, and I was like, son of a bitch. Like, I didn't even realize I was doing it, but all the confident people have like parallel body lines and perfect circles for heads.
right?
And like all these different little cues, I was like, I didn't really realize I was doing that. And now that I like have that vocabulary set aside, it's even easier to do them.
Right.
So I just like, it's usually the last thing I do at night at like 3 a.m. when I'm just zonked and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this in the morning. What's funny?
Well,
cereal.
I hope you. No, that was a great comic. Just, I mean, it beat you to it because you're thinking, okay, what's eating cereal watching TV? We've all been there. How's it going to equate? And then the character gets there before you do. He's like, I'm sure there's a metaphor here. I just haven't seen it yet. But I know what you're talking about with that feeling. Like, this is what you like after I've been working on all this. But isn't that sometimes the way? I know when people get creative, I know in my own case in the past, you know, when I've written music before, there have been songs that I'll spend time on, a lot of time, too much time, and trying to get perfect. And then there are others that I'm just like kind of frustrated or annoyed with. I'm like, I just want to get these done and out of the way. So I'll just haphazardly write them quickly and then get them done. And then when they're done, they turn out to be the best songs. People like them the best, or I like them the best. You know what I mean?
I think that's one of those things that keeps you moving forward as an artist, is because it's, if you get to a point where what you expect to be successful is always successful, then there's literally no reason to continue honing and refining.
Right.
So like when those things that you think are, you know, throwaways, for lack of a better term, or somehow beneath your prowess in your respective art form, when those pop, what it really does is show you that you actually know fucking nothing about what you're doing. Because obviously, if you knew anything, you would have been able to predict that. You know what I mean? And that's that. That's why it's important to have an audience, is because, like, when you create art in a vacuum, it can't escape. You know, you need that thing to throw it at to see if it sticks or if it bounces or if they catch it. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I get it, man. You've got a gem of a comic here. I've got to agree with what everyone's saying. And I can't say that it's your best, because I can't remember. I don't think I've seen all of your stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know anybody that has.
Okay.
It's buried deep, man.
But I'm digging this quite a bit, I'm entranced by it. But where can people...
And it's all free.
That's the best part. Where can people check this out?
Okay, so I put it up daily on my Instagram, which is at Sword Draws. And then my buddy Billy started an Always Itchy Insta, just the comics, if you don't want to see what else I'm doing. And that's at Always Kinda Itchy. And then it goes up on my Facebook every day too, which is my Facebook ID is Sword Draws. But I hate Facebook, so that's, you know, get on the Insta. We've talked about starting like a Patreon for it, where, you know, for like $3 a month, you get the daily strips. And then, you know, you get a free copy. I'm probably going to do seasonal collections of them. Because, like, before I got into comic books, like, I grew up on Calvin and Hobbes and Garfield.
So those were
the books that I said, you know. And so it kind of makes sense to me to be like, okay, well, you know, this is something that, you know, I can – like, I do shirts. We just started offering shirts. Each shirt is – just literally a white t-shirt that I buy from Target, and then I draw the main character's face on it with a fabric pen and then write something somewhat amusing, maybe, or depressing. I don't know. But that's like, cool. You know, each one's a one of a kind, shirt. Right? Yeah. And it says right on the thing, like, probably don't wash it a lot. The shirt's probably going to be a new one unless I'm too lazy to go to the store and I happen to wear your size. It may have like coffee stains or cigarette ash on it. Because, like, I like the lo-fi nature of it. I like the idea that this comic is probably the most honest thing I've ever done. And it's really unexpected, and I'm really into it. And, like, I'm going to try and submit it for syndication, probably.
Oh, nice.
Just to see. Because why not? Like, I don't imagine you'd pick up, like, this, like, the fucking local paper, and you'd see it next to Ziggy and Zitz and shit. But maybe in, like, the city pages. Or something.
No, I agree. Pause. I agree. There's a different climate out there. I think something like this would find its place comfortably. I can't stop looking at it. I'm staring at it. It's really cool.
I'm gonna keep doing it regardless of whether or not it becomes a financial perk of any sort. But at the conventions I'm doing this year, I'm going to have seasonal collections, like basically 3 months worth of strips in a book. And then the ones that get like a lot of, there's a few that are like front runners for ones that people really, really dug. And I've even thought about just doing like they're like three, or they're, was it, I think it's 5-inch by 17-inch prints of just the strip.
Oh, wow. That'd be cool.
That people could buy and like take home and frame or something. I don't know. I kind of stole that from Calvin and Hobbes, because like there's only two official pieces of Calvin and Hobbes merchandise, and they were both Scholastic learning to read books. Everything else has been bootlegged or done illegally, and Bill Watterson just doesn't care. But you can actually order a lithograph of a strip based on like the date that it was released. So anybody can go, like, I went back and found the strip that came out on the day I was born.
Oh, I see.
And it was like Kelvin thinking he was invisible and taking off his clothes and trying to steal cookies. And I was like, well, that is actually like, I don't believe in like horoscopes, but I believe in the prophetic nature of Bill Watterson when it comes to like the strip that came out on the day you were born might inform a lot of your life. So doing like little prints like that, or like we've talked about hand-drawn coffee cups, like just take it really, you know, lo-fi. I like lo-fi. I'm into it. It's a lot less work.
I get it.
You know,
so. A bunch of white mugs and a Sharpie, and you're good.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's working. I mean, it's working out for you, it looks like. You have a successful webcomic here, so.
That last one cracks me up about the person sitting there talking about, like, real-world business problems, and then at the end he's just like, I have trouble with shopping carts. It cracks me up.
All right.
That was real. I was at Target and I saw a human being managing three children, a cell phone, and a cart effectively. Wow. And I was literally like over at the cart area trying to pull the fucking thing out, and it was difficult. And I'm like, I'm 32 years old. This is like most basic form of mechanics that exists.
It shouldn't be that hard right now.
So yeah, that's the book. It's going to remain free. I say that now. If it gets picked up by a syndicate, I don't know how that would change. I would like to keep doing it for free. But like I said, a Patreon might be a thing too.
I was just going to say, yeah. I smell a Patreon around the corner, but.
Yeah, we'll give it another month or so, and hopefully some more folks will get into it, and we'll have enough pull so that maybe I can tattoo a little bit less, or not have to argue with fucking writers, man. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, this seems like it'd be a lot better than doing that, for sure. Well, man, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing this comic with us. We're definitely going to get it out there to the people and via social media, all the different handles that be. And everyone at home, again, go to swordrawls.com, or you can find it on swordrawls on Instagram, or always kinda itchy. Check out the strip there. But Adam, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys so much for having me, man. It's always a good time.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, where you can check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, see some of our YouTube page, buy some merch, become a patron. And if you want to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page. And if you are living in, on, or around Oregon by the end of the month, Wizard World's going to be there. And you can go to our website and sign up for 2 3-day priority platinum tickets just by signing up on
for
a form.
Free.
For free. Or if you don't want to feel that lucky, then you can just use our promo code CANDAIR. And get 10% off your tickets.
How far away is that?
The end of February.
22nd. All right, so a few more weeks, and then you're going to announce it.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. And again, check out our other show, What If. You can find that at whatifpod.com, or you can go to iTunes, just search What If Series, Player FM. That's probably about our biggest platform on that show. So check us out. Love over there. We're loving doing that show. And once again, we are going out on the song Daddy's Too Old from the band Quiet. That's Quiet without the U, Q-I-E-T. This is off the album Kiss of the Universe. Check these guys out. I am obsessed. I've been saying this episode after episode now. I'm not going to dwell on it this time. Just know they're good and check this out.
You don't like a song, listen to the next one because it might be your genre in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Adam Swart.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
You know I love you so much that even my girlfriends, they know about you, and they don't mind filling in. Know the past who I've been. I'll talk about you so much that even my pastor is worried about you. And the silence you make while you're tied to the stake. And I hear now that he's too old. You've been breaking hearts before the dark overcoat. I know I'll be for now. Now I know you've been thinking it. By now you've been dreaming it. By now you'll be out there drinking when the day and the night are low. I dream about you so much. I can hear the spirits, they speak about you. And they say we must reign. For she is not one of them. I sing about you so loud that even the stars, they run about you. I'm the man in the moon. I'm the man in your room. And I hear
chicken?
Hold on there, boys.
Wow, it's Flint!
Instead of writing your name, write CannedAirPodcast.com and help spread the word.
Well, that's a great idea. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Lock, lock, boom. Boom, lock. Lock boom.
Oh. Science, science, science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes... Yes! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.